Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is episode 2 of Podcasts in Car, teaching a bit of science as we go. Now, I've just been off to a rehab session. Oh, let's just get the air happening here. What's happened is that I've been pushing along, been doing a bit of programming, doing a bit of podcasting, a bit of science teaching, and I've been eating up or chewing up things that I can handle and push like that. Then I decided what I'll do is I'll go back and have another solid, broad attempt at an HSC physics questions for the HSC. And obviously, I don't know, you can think a lot more clearly without the din and the worry of politics about in your head. You can look at it and you can say, oh my goodness, it's just not me, it's you. Some of the things are a bit skew with. Now, when you actually come into, just even the first question was who advocated, who was the advocate of DC electricity? Now, that's just a fairly simple, standard question. I don't know what that would be. It would be in to introduce Faraday's law of induction. We began discussing that. And there's nothing all that wrong, except that very few people know the true story of Faraday and the link with science, that he was the looking at him, he was declared who is Faraday? He's a scientist. And then people said, what's that? Well, that's Faraday. That's sort of like, it started off with one bloke, and that was Faraday. And so his properties of experiment and honesty, humility, and all these things have been grafted into our concept. The other parallel concept was scientists. You've got mad scientists, you've got community scientists, scientist citizens, professional scientists, all these things. The root thing where a scientist suddenly appeared in history is Faraday. So there's obviously that intense history and understanding that there are certain people who are really non-mathematical, like Faraday and Tesla. Now Tesla, he didn't necessarily have any rigorous maths behind him. And this is why I picked up on a quote that he said about... true scientists just do experiments, they're relying more and more on mathematics, and eventually they'll come up with an idea which has got nothing to do with reality, which I think is really prophetic and really explains the current situation, that a lot of science is beyond our concept of reality. Like quantum mechanics fundamentally is outside our conception of reality. And then you have Westinghouse, and Westinghouse just... it's the sort of cartoon picture of Westinghouse financier, blah blah blah. He didn't understand. He was a tech bubble insightful person. Had been from he'd been a bubble entrepreneur, a true venture capitalist of the truest. Truest form. So I'm really coughing here. So to get into that, now that's of interest, but it's also having taught for a while to know some of the no-go zones. Even though Australia has abandoned a particular type of symbol for, I don't know, nigh on 40 years, people laboriously and with a certain amount of arrogance teach the old zigzag symbol for resistors. And there's this real sort of anger that if you say, oh, well, no, look, this is the Australian standard. This is what we're taught, we teach our electrical engineers. there's sort of a real anger because really there's no context for the new information. The old information is a beautiful context. It's in books. Their friends taught it. They've taught it. There's this good feeling with it. And there's no context for the new information. Also, there is this exceptional anger. I can't describe it when people describe, oh, it's a chemical reaction going on here, and hydrogen's bubbling off this electrode here, and the electrons, you can take them out here, and they go out into space. The anger, I can't describe going through it. So, in this episode, we're going to cover the next two questions. I don't think I'll be able to speak to an eye on 40 minutes for the next two questions. That's going to be a bit of a brain strain to do that. The next question two, 2017, everyone should know it, is to do with inertial frames of reference. Now, there's so much to say. It's so poorly taught. And it's the question your kiddies are told, tell us which is an inertial frame of reference. Now, the tricky is that none of them are inertial frames of references, okay? Because all of them have acceleration. Inertial frame of reference has no external, it's outside a field which causes acceleration. So all of them are on the planet causing acceleration, and there's so much to say. There is this sort of sneak get out of jail one where you can have a gravitational field, but as soon as you've got a gravitational field, all bets are off. It's not an eternal frame of reference. If you throw it, it'll go on a parabolic path. End of story. Constant speed, not. Now the ones are a rocket launch. Traveling at a constant velocity in a train. Now that's technically the one that they want you to have. Then a car going around a cornering a circle. Now that is profoundly not a frame of reference. Now on a most profound level, because there's a breaking of rotational symmetry with the universe. It's just, you know, that's the little gold standard for non-inertial frame. I can't think of a rocket launch. Oh, and a lift decelerating the floor. Now, what they have done is they have actually fully left modern science as we know it and had a good old nostalgic journey through the textbooks of yesteryear. So, a lift coming to rest on the ground floor. Now, interestingly here, that's the option D. There are two options there. It can be having additional gravity and slowing its descent, or it can be coming from the basement, going up. These questions, and you feel this pressure. Now, inertial frame, a frame of reference refers to a coordinate system, and the coordinate system is bolted onto various things. It's bolted onto the surface of the planet Earth, which is rotating, it's experiencing Coriolis force and all this other stuff, or it's bolted onto the face of your face or someone else's face, and we have an adjective to describe that frame of reference. We describe that frame of reference as Peter or Jim's or Cindy's or Samantha's frame of reference. That's bolted onto their face. Now, we may actually play around with it a little bit and actually say, angle-wise, it's locked to an angle of a room or something like that. Or that's one way of doing it. Or, depending how we do it, we can say the frame of reference of the rocket, but the rocket can actually change its angle, so the frame of reference is stuck to the rocket but rotates with it. So the rocket's frame of reference. And so a frame of reference refers to a coordinate system, an imagined conceptual coordinate system linked to the adjective associated with it. So a train's frame of reference. In a train, in a bus and a boat, there's a, you know, would you eat green eggs and ham? Yes, I am, Sam. Sam, I am. I will. Oh, is it Sam? I am Sam, Sam I am. I like to do it. Frames of references. So that's an important thing. But where inertial, the law of inertia applies to that frame, objects within that frame of reference. That is, that objects which are tagged within that frame of reference, okay, so there are going to be many objects, but in my frame of reference, I can further say that my frame of reference refers to me and objects that I tag within it. Okay, and so you can say, I can be in a black a room in a box with socks in a box, and I can have an object framed in it, and that will obey the Newton's first law, that is, an object at rest in an inertial frame of reference, object which at rest will remain at rest, or travelling in a constant velocity will continue to travel at a constant velocity, change, I think, their speed and direction. Now, the interesting thing is that Newton wrote in Latin, and when you actually read it, he actually says, he doesn't refer to them as his laws. He's saying these are commonly known. It's only teachers who have cut corners, have eventually grafted his insights into laws, and we've come across it. But first law of inertia. So an inertial frame of reference is where inertia is coming across, and there is no acceleration. Now, in a rocket, obviously, there is some acceleration. Yes, there is acceleration in one axis. Now, in a train traveling at constant velocity, there is no acceleration in the direction that it is traveling, unless it is traveling up a hill. Okay. If it's traveling up a hill, you put a ball at rest on a plate. You know, a plate is something which cancels out. It gives you a limited frame of reference. It will still roll down. So it is not sufficient. Even though they say it's traveling at constant velocity, it's traveling at constant velocity on a flat grade to really, really get across. Now, that laws of inertia means, well, bloody hell, I'm on a train and I can tell you that I'm a train on Earth or on Mars or on Mercury or wherever. I can tell you, or in deep space, because if I chuck a ball, it's going to go in a parabolic arc. So it's a limited frame of inertia. The limited frame is to the flat ball, the billiard table. In fact, billiards, an example of a frame of reference is a working man's definition is an inertial frame is a frame in which one can play billiards and the balls will not and will be fair. And a true inertial frame means that you can tilt the table. The orientation doesn't matter. But if you have to tilt the table such that you can select and cancel out one axis, that is a limited inertial frame. Does that make sense? A limited inertial frame. I'm not making it up. Your definitions are all screwy. The only way that you can actually convince... Oh, come off the car. Moving out. Oops. I've got this huge truck bearing up behind me. So that's the only way that you can get an inertial frame of reference working there. So, this says that the rocket and the lift are things that if you were not cued by teachers who taught in a particular way using those reference material in a particular way, i.e. at particular schools who are teachers schooled in it, it is testing to a certain extent the level and context that you're taught in. It is testing knowledge, yes, for sure. But it is also, will also pull out of the woodwork people who will do it. Now, the interesting thing is that you can say, oh, come off it, come on, you bastard. Whoa, shush. He's on a mission. He's going off, he's speeding up to his accent, I'm sure. He's coming off the centre over here, Matt. Okay. Now, the issue is that the idea that people can still get through this without being habituated. So quite literally, if I use the proper definition of which one of these things is a limit, can I have a limited range of inertia? It can be a limited inertial frame, i.e. two axes out of three, I can have the laws of physics operate. Okay, so I can have a puppet table, one of those air tables, or I could have billiards on it. You could do it three. You could have it on the rocket. You'd be playing billiards on a rocket. You'd feel the G-force, which is still sure as hell would be able to sink something through. You could be on a train. Again, the train itself would have to be flat. It wouldn't be, have to be go up and down. And most definitely, the one which would win the most, because very few lifts travel at an angle, except possibly at Willy Wonka's factory, is the... you could have a bit of table in that. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that a truly creative, advanced thinker will be able to get through that maze, that puzzle, but they will take longer to process through, and they will be disadvantaged. And so your very top students are students who have been schooled just with these examples, these specific examples, and their level of understanding is necessarily low because the person teaching them is teaching them a cut-down version of the actual knowledge. The actual knowledge has become corrupted, and it's very much like cognitive decline. It is a national cognitive decline. So this question too doesn't get a full five-star question. The next question that we came across is to do with electric field. Now, does... the electric field is a simple thing. You have some plates. It goes from positive charges to negative charges. So, field lines... electric field lines go from positive to negative. Magnetic field lines just don't talk to me about it. Magnetic field lines do not go from a north monopole to a south monopole. They go in a circle circulating out of the north pole and in through the south pole. Which means that our north pole is the south magnetic pole of the Earth. End of story. If our north magnets will always be, the force on a north pole will be away from the south poles. So our north magnetic pole is in the southern bloody hemisphere. That's the way it works. End of story. And also field lines, magnetic field lines, don't finish. They always go in circles. End of story. Because there's no such thing as the imaginary poles. Now, my point that I want to make here, as I'm just cruising for a bruising over here, I don't know why are all these people travelling up to the Blue Mountains at 3:53 on a Thursday afternoon? I ask you, I do not understand that. Okay, now, basically, the moment that you step out someone's comfort zone, they go, let's see, do I have to think? No, I'll just label that person. That person's pedantic. That person's rubbish. That person doesn't feed their cat properly. Whatever. The bottom line is that the people throwing criticism at you actually believe that electric field lines are real. Electrons are real because I can get killed by them. Atoms are bad. They're real. You can put them in a bullet and fire at me. But you can't. An electric field line is only convention. It is only concept. And there as much, it is very highly significant that you get the conventions right. Now, if you go into an Australian country town, and people have been breaking the law for a long, long time. Half the people in the city don't bother stopping at the stoplights. You can't say, oh, well, look, that law no longer applies because half the people don't do it. You can't actually open up these bad textbook, in which they draw the field line with a vector arrow. So it's a vector field. This entire, just gobsmacks me, because there are certain things, there are scalars, vectors, tensors, and you can describe them with little vector points in them, okay, and the size, magnitude, all that type of stuff. But field line is an invention of Michael Faraday, and he spent a long time thinking about it, and he invented it himself, knew exactly how he made it, because he used to etch plates. He used to make etchings, the religious drawings with it, and he'd draw the lines, and he'd draw these intricate lines around the place. And they were a way, they could be interpreted to tell you about field density. So they're a convention, they're a symbolism, and goes. And so what we have here in the HSE exam, we have the charges in our plate sitting in the centre of the plate. So the field line has to go into the charge. It has to end on a charge. So if it ends on the plate, the charge is on the surface of the plate. If it ends in the centre, the charge is in the centre. Make up your mind. There is sort of two ways of doing it. You can put plus symbols on a plate, but they've got to be smaller now. Or you put an arrow and say, this is positively charged. There's two ways of doing it. You can't mix the two. And you can't have a field line as a line with an arrow on the end of it. That's not a field line. A field line is a line and it represents a line of force, a line that an infinitely heavy particle will travel. And the direction of travel along the line is done with a small little V arrow halfway along the line. So this look so, I just can't describe it. It is so essential. It is a recipe for continued disaster. Doing this. So I've tried to explain it. And the other thing to understand is that the relationship between charge and voltage and space and distance is not, well, you could say it's God-given. It doesn't fall out of the equations. The relationship is a property of our universe, our space. There's the permissivity of space, which gives you the strength of a electric field given a distance and a space. I think obviously it's a bit much for people to understand, but space has a response to electric field. That is, it has sort of like the gravitational field strength. Like, it allows, the space has a response. So I have a charge, and the charge affects the space, and so the affected space, creates the force. It creates an acceleration through that space. That charge does not send out information at a distance. This entire thing of, I don't know, I think I heard it 10 years ago, first time in an old codger. So an old person teaching in the school said there are two types of force, contact force and non-contact distance force. These are forces which work by magic. Now, the bottom line is that Newton, he came up with these forces which act at a distance, and these forces acted at a distance. And he said, I feign no hypothesis, I have no explanation. These are not explained, these are magical forces. And of course, along came Einstein and the physicists many years later, and we begin to explain it. by distortion of space. So I've got a charge, and what happens is that charge distorts or puts a pressure through space. And so if I have a different type of space, if I went from a different type of universe, the speed of light would be different. It's the actual propagation of electric field through space is intimately linked to the speed of light. You can actually calculate the speed of light from the, I think it's a ratio of the electric and magnetic field permeability. And permeability means how much the electric field goes through space. It's the distance. I've got a charge, I've got another charge at another point. There's obviously some movement of space in that way, which explains the force. So there's that there. So let's go back and do a summary of three questions. Beneath the surface of the very first question are these misconceptions about who did what, what Faraday did, what Westinghouse did. It's misconceptions beneath the surface about the symbols of a circuit, or what indeed a DC a DC dry cell that operates like. Okay, fair cop. I think it's a reasonable question. Just understand the teaching environment is going to leave people here high and strained. The next one is inertial frame of reference, taught purely by pressure teaching. You're teaching a bit like, I think Einstein called them clever hands. You can actually get a response that people can think, imagine they understand. People can imagine they can understand an inertial frame of reference, but what they're testing is, have you carefully been, quietly been indoctrinated here? Because they haven't actually asked, is it a limited frame of reference? The next question is, pick the right answer. Now, there's obviously four wrong answers. Four wrong answers, completely wrong in terms of convection and convention. That's wrong. Having something wrong in terms of convention is a double wrong. Okay. So the convention is wrong, but the idea that convention doesn't matter is wrong again. So you've got, it's sort of like a double hit to do it. Now the result of this is that someone who goes through a thing, they answer correctly, they get the top mark, they get patted at home, they get a meal out, they get an award, something like that. And you turn around to them, okay, in the and say, look, say years later, oh well, that's not how you draw a field line. That sort of person who has been taught by example to be contemptuous of the correct answer, well, I can tell you in advance, they sort of go, look, this is all crazy. I don't understand it. And of course, they don't understand it, not because you can't explain it, but because it has been mis-explained systematically in a system-wide mis-explanation. So this is electric field lines, magnetic field lines. Look, and can I say the joy of getting it's sort of like having a clean shed. A lot of people have these sheds full of old material that they never use, concepts which upset them. Knowing the correct conventions means that you can actually get to grips with the stuff that you really, really don't know. That's the things which are hard to know, not just been made difficult to know. There's a difference there. And there are things that I really, really struggle with. But I can tell you, I don't struggle with classical mechanics. It's just wrong. It's just laughably wrong and out of date. Okay, look, thanks a lot. I've obviously don't use classical mechanics in certain instances, but definitely not for anything which quantum mechanics has absolutely ruled the roost for. Thanks a lot for listening. On to the next podcast. Thank you.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.